When you think about it, pretty much everything from the food we eat to the music we listen to makes a political statement. It may not be immediately obvious what the statement is, but it's there. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. On this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I will discuss a trio of films that present either as straight entertainment, as cultural curiosity, or as both, yet end up taking pointed political stances. I'm talking about the musical documentary Homecoming, a film by Beyoncé, the issues-oriented documentary Hail Satan, and the con artist comedy The Hustle. So don't touch that dial, because another edition of Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
The Monterey Pop Festival of 1967 launched the careers of Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Otis Redding, and other iconic musicians and bands.
Experience this groundbreaking event in a showing of the restored D.A. Pennebaker Festival documentary at the Spokane Public Radio Thank You event, Wednesday, June 12th at 7 o'clock at the Bing Crosby Theater.
The evening starts with a taping of Movies 101, discussing Monterey Pop and other music documentaries.
60s memorabilia, courtesy of 4,000 Holes.
This event celebrates Spokane Public Radio volunteers, business supporters, and grantors.
Thanks also to Strong Solutions, The Cleaning Authority, and Vinoa Wine Shop for helping to make this possible.
Monterey Pop, June 12th, 7 p.m. at the Bing.
Tickets are available at all Tickets West outlets or online at ticketswest.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that tries to separate art from politics, but admits such efforts don't always amount to much, because as so many cultural commentators have observed, everything, in one way or another, is a political statement. So it should come as no surprise that all three of the films we'll talk about this week reflect that sentiment. Homecoming, a film by Beyoncé, captures the performer's headliner shows at the 2018 Coachella Music Festival. Hail Satan follows a national group's attempts to fight what they see as the growing influence of Christian beliefs on government. And the comedy The Hustle reinvents a classic male storyline with Me Too verve. Let's begin with a bit of Beyoncé. Beyoncé Giselle Knowles-Carter long ago joined that select club of superstar performers known by their first name alone. That's something that the documentary film Homecoming, a film by Beyoncé, emphasizes and consecrates. Shot over two appearances a week apart at the 2018 Coachella Music Festival, the film both captures the immense effort that went into the production, which took nearly a year to prepare and involved hundreds of supporting players, both on stage and off, and the reasons, beyond the obvious financial and fame, for why Beyoncé wanted to do it. In between the musical numbers, she explains her motivations, which include a celebration of Black culture and an impassioned statement in support of women. This isn't the first time Beyoncé's gotten so personal. Her 2016 video album Lemonade is a searing study both of her reaction to her husband Jay-Z's infidelity and a call for women's empowerment. While other entertainers are content merely to placate their audiences with fantasies involving wealth and the pleasure it can buy, Beyoncé wants to add in a cultural wake-up call, and she's one of the few international talents that can have it both ways.
I agree that she is an amazing performer, but I think that her Homecoming film is way more than that. So it's not your typical concert film, or at least not in the spirit of The Last Waltz or Stop Making Sense, because this is a performance, a concert performance, that is interspersed with all of these other important features of the personal and the political and so forth. And I think that the way that this is shot, there are a lot of action shots of people in the audience as well. But this is just an amazing, amazing performance. I mean, the fact that she was headlining Coachella, almost 20 years into its existence was notable in and of itself. But the production is just so complex in terms of the number of people who were involved as performers, the behind-the-scenes folks. The thing that I really liked about the performance, I mean, of course, the women's empowerment theme, which I think is even more front and center in Lemonade, it was present here as well. But I really liked the involvement of students from the HBCUs, the historically black colleges and universities, because there's a tribute and a focus on that throughout in terms of who's involved, in terms of the outfits and so forth. We've seen some of these things before in mainstream presentations, such as Drumline, for example, but it was just really a tribute to, I think, not only African-American culture, but young people, history, women, relationships, and so forth.
She's done this before with platforms as large as this. I mean, think about her Super Bowl halftime performance.
Oh, absolutely.
Although she
wasn't
even the headliner that year.
I know, that was interesting.
But she came in with that song Formation. She premiered that song, and it was a shout out to black culture and to the Black Panthers in particular. So this isn't necessarily a surprise coming from her. And throughout Homecoming, we get these interstitials where we see the production kind of coming into place. We see them rehearsing. We see the audition process.
From the very beginning. I mean, she has just given birth to twins.
Right. And that's part of the challenge, too, because we're seeing this performer who's really at the top of her game and is seemingly this flawless presence. And then we're realizing how much work actually went into this because she makes it look really easy. She is a famously closed-off celebrity. I mean, both she and Jay-Z don't really talk about their personal lives,
right,
or even
give
interviews.
Taylor Swift. I mean, so that's why her, I think, Lemonade album was such a departure from
right.
other things.
They've commented on their personal lives and their marriage in their work. But even then, I think we have to sort of take it with a grain of salt, because I think even when we're getting a supposed warts and all look at the Knowles Carters, it's performative in a way. And I felt that way about Homecoming a little bit. But I think what does shine through is the sheer talent of these people that she has assembled. And it's
right.
a giant crowd. And when you see them up on these risers, I mean, it's a remarkable sight. And I saw little clips of this when the Coachella performances were actually happening, because she basically took a music festival, a giant music festival with hundreds of performers, and made it all about her. You watch this performance and you totally understand why, because it's somebody that's just in complete command of their talent, of their art, of their body, of the people that they've surrounded themselves
but
with.
I guess I didn't appreciate fully how much she was in charge of the production.
Yeah.
Because we see several shots of her commenting on things that seem, pretty minor, but she mm-hmm. is a noted perfectionist. And I think that came through in this.
Oh, totally.
In this film.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing to me is that she's hardly the only person, the only entertainer who's ever had this much control, who's worked this hard, who's this talented. But you add all that with her insistence on saying something important, something mm-hmm. about black culture, something about women's empowerment, something about the pain and the heartbreak of being in a relationship and being cheated on. Now, whether that really had anything to do with Jay-Z or not, I don't think it makes any difference, because in her audience, you know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of women who felt the same kind of thing. I was mostly impressed. After seeing this movie, I was much more impressed with the production values of what I saw and of the message than I was with the actual music. Perhaps part of that was because I needed to be in the crowd there at Coachella to be wrapped.
That would have been a sight.
To be caught up in the absolute magic of that.
The Homecoming
tour, live performances can move you. Because Lemonade moved me much more, but it was produced in a way that there was supposed to be for a home audience, someone watching it on television.
You're talking about the visual album that she
made. Right, the visual album.
The 2016 visual album, which is fantastic, by the way.
I totally agree.
And I like the music in that better, but I understand, I think, why I did. But there is no way that you can't come away impressed for all the reasons both of you have mentioned. Let's compare this to the movie we talked about last week.
Sure.
Amazing Grace.
I was just about to get into that.
Yeah.
So perfect segue.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Aretha Franklin.
Well, I wanted to talk about the parts of Homecoming that were performance, that were just the Coachella performance filmed and edited, because we talked about Amazing Grace last week, and that's the long in gestation Aretha Franklin concert film where she's recording her live gospel album Amazing Grace, and director Sidney Pollack filmed it in an L.A. church in 1972. And we sort of talked on last week's show about how it's almost like a found object,
mm-hmm.
because they took all of this, at the time, unusable footage and have put it together into something resembling a feature film. And we talked about the kind of historical context of this. Whereas this film is, because
Homecoming,
it's Beyonce
Homecoming, yeah.
because it's Beyonce, we know that every single shot, that every single edit is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed also by some of the camera placements,
mm-hmm.
where I kept thinking, how did they get a camera where they've got it right there?
Mm-hmm.
How was this so seamlessly put together? And there's an editing technique that they use that every time they did it, I found it really thrilling, which is on each of the different nights, they wore different colors.
Yeah.
So one night they all wore mm-hmm. yellow, one night they all wore pink.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep editing it so that it will cut, and the next shot they'll be in a different color, but mm-hmm. in the exact same position. And I think that speaks to just the
how tight the
how
show,
well-oiled
the
this machinery
right. yes,
was,
yeah.
how there are
yeah.
all these moving parts, hundreds of moving parts, and they're all in complete sync with one yeah. another. And that yeah. was a really thrilling technique.
And, you know, the one other thing I wanted to mention, and both of you, I think, we've talked around this, she is in control, and she's on the stage the whole time. I mean, it's amazing. It's about her. And yet, what an unselfish performer. She brings on the two people from
Destiny's
from
Child.
Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
I can't think of another headline performer who would even deign to go back and say, oh, yeah, I was once part of a trio.
I mean, she did that at the Super Bowl when she was actually the headliner. So she's done that many times.
But it's totally amazing. It's yeah. unusual
it
for someone. And that just speaks to how unselfish she is as a headliner.
Well,
and
you didn't even need Destiny's Child. It's Kelly Rowland and Michelle Williams, by the way. You didn't even need them to come out to know that, because just look at the group of musicians and dancers
right.
and vocalists that she's assembled, and she just kind of lets them do their thing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that I think speaks to, even though this is a very Beyonce-driven film, there is sort of a democratic kind of
yeah.
artistry going on.
And
here.
We need to say we saw this on, we saw it Amazon through, no.
Netflix.
Netflix. We yep. saw it through Netflix. So people, you can watch it at home, and it's well worth
right.
watching.
Right, and now Lemonade is streaming again, too.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's,
exactly.
that's cool
yeah,
as
we
well.
Turned this up real loud.
Yeah.
yeah.
And that was Homecoming, a film by Beyonce. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Hail Satan and The Hustle. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the music-minded documentary Homecoming, a film by Beyonce. Let's now move to a couple of other politically-minded movies of completely different genres. One is the documentary Hail Satan, and the other is the comedy The Hustle. Let's begin with a bit of religious fervor. When contemplating the title of Penny Lane's documentary Hail Satan, it's important to note the punctuation, specifically the question mark that Lane includes. So it's not Hail Satan as a statement, but Hail Satan as a query, which is an earmark of what any good documentary study of an issue should do. Follow the basic journalistic inquiry of asking who, what, when, where, why, and how. Lane's subject is the Satanic Temple, which at first glance is a group that embraces evil, namely in the form of Satan or Lucifer or Mephistopheles or the devil or any name you want to give to the fallen angel of Christianity. But as Lane shows us, what the group actually embraces is rebellion and free thinking. To them, Satan is merely the guy who resisted the dictates of an authoritarian deity. Their acts, embodied in their attempts to force local government to find a place for the near 9-foot-tall monument of goat-headed Baphomet, are designed to underline the basic constitutional protections against the intermingling of church and state. And you can't get much more political than that.
I agree, because this whole area does seem like it's extremely politicized right now. And unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court for the past 25 years has not really done a whole lot to clarify the law or the constitutional law on this particular topic of the separation of church and state, as we sometimes refer to it. So this documentary I found to be particularly intriguing because, as we've always said, find a good subject and find a good individual to focus on. And we do have that, and we almost have two sort of competing views of what the Satanic Temple, which is what this group calls itself, what it means and implies for its membership and for the outside world. So Hail Satan begins by looking at some of the similar themes that atheists, Madeline Murray O'Hare back in the 1950s and others, have looked at in terms of the use of religious displays in public space. So that's at least part of the focus of this film. But then it's also about this group of people who are basically rebels. And you're always wondering, at least in the beginning of the movie for sure, how much of this is tongue-in-cheek? I mean, how much of this is the poke the bear provocateur approach? But then we start to see, even if it was a group of scattered folks, it actually starts to get some momentum. And I would—
Nationally and internationally,
right, and I would encourage people to go online and check out the 7 tenets of the Satanic Temple, because I think many people would agree with what the tenets of their so-called religion happens to be. But it does involve the political overarching issue, because Penny Lane, the filmmaker in Hail Satan, finds a perfect foil in this representative
from Arkansas,
Arkansas, where they're debating about what to do with this Ten Commandments monument. And especially it becomes more complicated because now the Satanic Temple wants to introduce and put up on public property this goat-headed Baphomet. And so it's talking heads, it's interviews with individuals, it's fly-on-the-wall footage and so forth. And I actually like this a lot.
Yeah, well, I mean, if this is some kind of posturing, they take it pretty far with their rituals, which involve naked people and choking on wine. And at one point, pig heads on stakes and smashing fluorescent lights. And okay, where do you get a fake pig head then?
Right,
I mean, so I mean, there is like some performative thing going on, but I think that there are people that do take this relatively seriously. And yet, all the way through Hail Satan, I was thinking about the Yes Men. There were a couple documentaries made about them. They're these fake entrepreneurs who go around making these ridiculous business pitches, basically trolling all of these corporate bigwigs. And it's sort
trying
of like
to get
a
venture capital.
Yeah,
from...
it's a thumb in the eye of capitalism, essentially. And what the Satanic Temple here is doing is they're basically, in one way or another, pointing out how inherently ridiculous all religions really are if you look at them long enough. Mm-hmm. That the basic ideas behind Satanism are no weirder or more preposterous than a lot of the tenets behind Christianity. And I think Penny Lane does a good job. And she's directed a couple other similar documentaries.
Our Nixon.
Yeah, I think she does a good
job
of portraying that. But the difference here between somebody that's just trolling somebody and the Satanic Temple is that I think that their messaging actually has some political substance and weight to it. And I think that they have a lot of good points. You know, this idea of, well, if you're going to put a Ten Commandments monument on government land, which is a weird thing to want to do anyway, it's almost like this religious contest in
although
a way.
Although we did
like,
find
which
out
religion
why
have the
Ten
biggest...
Commandments,
yeah,
thanks
and
to Cecil B. DeMille.
Well, I think people should – I don't want to spoil that because that was one of the great revelations of this
Chuck
movie.
Heston.
But he basically says, you know, if the Ten Commandments can go on there, then any religion should be able to have their own monument. If the Ten Commandments monument comes down, then so will the Satanic monument. I mean, it should be a level playing field, and I think that they've got a really good point there. I'm not going to rush out and join – the Satanic Temple anytime soon, but a lot of them seem like very nice people.
I know.
With
plus
really
the,
cool face plus tattoos.
They all wear black, so what could be bad about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they all wear black to the beach at one point, uh-huh. and I could relate to that.
Yeah. And that was Hail Satan, which at the screening we were at got a lot more laughs than the movie we're going to talk about now, which is the comedy The Hustle. It's impossible even to think of The Hustle, a con artist comedy starring Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson, without mentioning Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the 1988 Michael Caine-Steve Martin film that itself was a remake of the 1964 David Niven-Marlon Brando film Bedtime Story. That's because The Hustle uses a well-worn storyline, that of two competing con artists working a wealthy French Riviera city, to do little more than feature Hathaway in a virtual fashion show of gowns and Wilson pulling off some of her trademark comic routines. Despite being a gender swap collection of one-note jokes, The Hustle is occasionally funny. Wilson has that kind of talent, but the film overall skirts anything remotely resembling a larger point.
I didn't think this was occasionally funny. I think
somebody
that's granting
in your screening
it a kindness.
Did.
There was one guy in my screening that was laughing like he was watching this on TBS in his living room. I mean, he was commenting out loud, and listening to him was a lot more engaging than this movie. I was looking in the opening credits for a credit for the original screenplay, which I guess wasn't that original because it's a remake of a remake. But I mean, they lift jokes directly from the 1988 version of Dirty Rotten
Absolutely.
Scoundrels, but they just do them way, way worse. I mean, it's like listening to a terrible cover version of a song that was fine, that didn't need to be touched.
The scene, particularly with Wilson, and she's in the jail cell, it's a ripoff of what Steve Martin did, which was really funny.
Well,
Steve Martin
is best. And the whole joke about Steve Martin pretending to be this kind of weird, inbred little brother, they ripped that off too, but to way less comical effect. And I thought that Anne Hathaway was on the right wavelength here. I thought that Rebel Wilson was straining so hard for comedy. I mean, she can be really irritating when she doesn't have anything funny to do. And she just seems like she's flailing around because she knows that this isn't working. And so she's trying real hard. And there's just a lot of flop sweat there. And that's not funny. And then you have their Mark is this guy played by Alex Sharp, who is an actor that I didn't recognize, but he sort of has a Miles Teller kind of vibe to him.
Yes.
And I think there was a real problem in making him into a smart, seemingly sweet guy, because that saps all the comedy out of it. The joke of the original, or at least the 80s version of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which as far as I'm concerned is what this movie is copying, the joke was that Glenn Headley, who was the target, she was a total ditz and was completely oblivious to these two total, you know, jackasses. And that's where the comedy came from. So I think that this was just fundamentally flawed. And it just seemed like an excuse for these people to go on vacation to the French Riviera, but they weren't funny while they were doing it.
Well, I don't know. I think that's a worthwhile
yeah, but I don't want to pay for their vacation.
Okay, right. But so now we're telling other people that they don't have to pay for it.
No.
But I think that's part of the problem here. We've seen some examples in the relative recent past, whether it's Ghostbusters or Ocean's 8, where we flip the genders of the participants who were involved. And I think here, this sort of simultaneously did that flip, but it didn't take advantage of it in any sort of meaningful way.
Right.
And it was almost like, what? So if you're going to do this, you know, not saying every single ensemble cast involving women has to have a huge feminist statement. But here, it's almost like this was a retro statement in some respects, because they were trying to seduce these men using their feminine wiles.
There's also a guy at the beginning that they seduce who then just vanishes from the movie entirely. And it becomes about – it's really – confused, I think, about what it's even trying to
be. I know, we
should
have gone to see Palms, so maybe we can do that for next
week. I saw Palms with my mom and my grandmother, and I liked it more than this.
Oh. Okay,
and
good
it wasn't
to know.
That good either.
You're throwing down the gauntlet.
Mother's Day,
I know.
And that was The Hustle, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed Homecoming, a film by Beyoncé, and Hail Satan. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tavlin for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again brave the world of contemporary cinema. Until then, remember these wise words from James Madison, 4th U.S. President and author of the Bill of Rights. The purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe in blood for centuries. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.